You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:58 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.
Well, good morning. It's 9 a.m. and it's time to fight the empire. I'm the host, Per Fogring, and it's on your radio station, KBOO. So, big item in the news today is that this just came in. Apparently, a Taiwanese news channel broadcast by mistake a fictional news alert that said Chinese armed forces had launched an invasion, firing missiles at cities and ports surrounding the capital, Taipei. Several news captions declaring a violent attack by China's People's Liberation Army have been mocked up for security drills, but were broadcast accidentally to viewers yesterday. Other item in the news is that we hear a lot of talk about, the war Ukraine started when Russia invaded back in 2021 or whatever. But the war actually began quite a bit sooner when you can say it began in 2014. And that's when the president of Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, was overthrown. He was the elected president of Ukraine, and he was thrown out of office by violent street protests, and he was replaced. And this was back in 2014, I believe. So this is something to keep in mind, that the war began not the way you're getting it, not the way you're hearing about it on the regular news channels. So if anybody has a question or a comment, please call 503-231-8187. I see that President Biden is coming to Portland, I think, tomorrow. Looks like he won't be coming to KBOO. He's going to be coming to the, I guess his main appearance will be at the Portland Yacht Club, which is up on Marine Drive. And so this is it's too bad he can't come to our little station. We could show him around our little building here on Southeast 8th, and maybe we could even get an interview with him, but I kind of doubt it'll happen. Anyway, first, one of my people on one of my websites has created a timeline about the war in Ukraine. His name is Richard J. Ox, and it's a very handy thing to have around when you get on the news that saying that the Ukraine war started in 2021 or whatever. His timeline actually begins in October 2002, and that's when the Pentagon came out with its statement regarding a full spectrum dominance. What this means is that the U.S. would be sort of the supreme ruler of the world. Basically, that's what it means, that the U.S. would dominate the world in a full spectrum in every way possible. I suppose militarily, economically, and so forth. And that was declared way back, 20 years ago, in October 2002. More recently, in 2014, Ukraine's elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, was overthrown in a violent coup. You may probably remember those scenes from the streets of Kiev where street protests in the Maidan city square, and that's when the elected president Yanukovych was forced out of office, and later on that same year, Ukraine was fighting separatists in the eastern part of Ukraine, and according to Richard Ox, they have killed 14,000 Russian speakers in this ongoing war. In 2015, ceasefire agreements at Minsk were violated by Kiev continuing the war, and then in 2019, President Zelensky was elected president after a peace promise, and he was then in 2021 is when Russian troops appeared at the Ukraine border. So the timeline actually begins a lot sooner than most people realize. And so this is something to keep in mind. And it's very easy to lose track of, these timelines and sort of focus on the earliest, most recent news events. And it's always good to sort of dig back a little bit and ask yourself, how did all this begin? Once again, this is Fight the Empire, and I'm the host, Per Fogring, and we welcome your calls and comments. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. And another item in the news, which has probably been overlooked with all the others, in Africa, there's been a trial going on. The trial is concluded now. It was the former French colony of Burkina Faso was ruled by Thomas Sankara, and he was murdered back in 1987. And after there has been a trial going on, in which his successor, he was convicted of assassinating Sankara. The successor is a was Burkina's former president Blaise Compaoré, and he was a comrade and friend of Sankara, but he was found guilty of complicity in Sankara's murder. Unfortunately, Compaoré, who was had fled the country, and he was had sought refuge in Ivory Coast after he was overthrown in a coup in 2014. He had tried to change the constitution to allow him to rule in perpetuity, and 14 people were charged for Sankara's killing in the trial, and it began last October. 8 other people were found guilty of a range of offenses, and so the verdict was greeted with jubilation by Sankara's supporters in the courtroom, and throughout his 27-year rule, Compaoré had thwarted attempts to investigate the circumstances of Sankara's death, including repeated calls for his remains to be exhumed, adding to the speculation about Compaoré's part in the murder. So now we do have a some resolution. We have a verdict in this killing, and people should look up, go online and look up Thomas Sankara. He was a revolutionary and anti-imperialist leader. He was an army captain, and he was the first ruler of Burkina Faso. In fact, he gave the land its name. Burkina Faso means the land of upright people. It had been called Upper Volta before that. Another item in the news which has been talked about a bit is that is when did the war in Ukraine start? And we have to at the start of the war, you can say the war before the war actually started. It could be way back in earlier when the U.S. Kind of moved in into the region, sort of as part of its full spectrum dominance policy, and they overthrew. This is one thing always to keep in mind, is that an elected president of Ukraine was overthrown. He was Viktor Yanukovych, and he was overthrown, and it was only then that they had elections. He had fled to Russia, and a lot of his followers were in the eastern part of Ukraine, and there was a civil war going on which sort of continues to this day. If you look at a map of Ukraine, it's a very divided country. You have the ethnic you sort of wonder how did Ukraine get the borders that it does have, because it's in the northwest part of the country is populated by the ethnic Ukrainians. So you might say this is Ukraine Ukraine proper, but then the whole southeast are ethnic Russians, Russian-speaking people, and so there is this kind of a civil war going on right now, which pits the central government against the other half of Ukraine, which has been downgraded over the years. And so the U.S., you know, is the U.S. has put a lot of sanctions on the Ukrainian rebels, or the, and so in fact, I counted up all the sanctions that the U.S. has placed on various people around the world. As far as I can tell, the U.S. has about 38 sanctions in effect against various people that it doesn't choose to fight them in a war, but it will put economic sanctions on them as sort of a way of fighting a war without actually going to war.
We have Bruce on the line.
And we have a caller on the line. Good morning.
Morning, Pear. This whole thing about, is it Kiev or Kiev? I looked it up the other day, and it says that the U.S. Board of Geography started petitioning in 2006 to have the name changed to Kiev from Kiev, and then in 2019 officially dropped Kiev as the pronunciation and spelling for that city, which, I mean, we always thought it was Kiev, but anyway, now you hear this orchestrated campaign to just take Russia off the map and say, well, it was never Kiev. It's an Orwellian rewriting, a Ministry of Truth, where it's, well, it was always Kiev. You know, we were always at war with Eurasia. And
well,
so
I think,
go ahead, sorry.
Well, from what my understanding is that Kiev, K-Y-I-V, is sort of the Ukrainian pronunciation, and Kiev is K-I-E-V, is the Russian pronunciation. The same city, just pronounced different ways in two slightly different languages. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was so clueless in the beginning that I began to think, oh, well, maybe Kiev is another city. And I think they sort of floated that out there that, you know, but I mean, the gates of Kiev by Mussorgsky, it was always just... That's, you know, I never heard of the city Kiev. I'm no doubt that it's Ukrainian, and that's the Ukrainian pronunciation, but I like the way that the U.S. is on top of it. And before launching this careless encirclement, they started, you know, starting with name changes and de-Russifying that entire region, if they possibly can, to the point of even these sort of small-minded cultural efforts, but it's an interesting glimpse into how pervasive this manufacturing of this consent is been worked out.
Well, you might say that the propagandists are very thorough. They pay great attention to all the little details.
Absolutely. But anyway, enjoying the show. Thomas Sankara was, of course, he was a Marxist leader. They called him the African Che, and I enjoyed that. I had no idea that the trial was going on. I did remember that fellow, who I think was a close, you know, fellow officer, if not sort of a de facto bodyguard, Campari, then was involved critically and found guilty of involvement in the assassination. So he was, I remember him being on French television, Sankara, and kind of going toe-to-toe with Mitterrand and reprimanding Mitterrand about various issues, which Mitterrand handled fairly well. But, you know, it was still, he was sort of the sun king, Mitterrand. And he listened to the criticism, which was, you know, pretty remarkable. But Sankara was unabashed and said, well, here's what's going on. And it was a kind of a famous, it's probably on YouTube, people can see it. He was an upright man. There's, I think there's a DVD at the library on him called The Upright Man, I believe, Thomas.
Oh,
Sankara.
Really? Very interesting.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, enjoying the show, and those are a couple. Yeah, I'm grateful to find out about that trial happened. Amazed that it didn't get on to CBS and NBC, but, you know.
Well, I guess the trial happened some time ago. I guess it was, well, I'm trying to get the time straight here, but I mean, Sankara was he was killed back in when was it? Back in 19. Well, it was some time ago, and then he was his successor was a former friend who was actually convicted in this trial of complicity in his murder.
Campari.
Blaise Campari.
Yeah.
He actually had Sankara assassinated and then took over the office, and he was president of Burkina Faso for many years. Mm-hmm. And now he is living in exile. But, you know, I guess justice delayed is better than no justice at all.
Well, it sure is. And I'm enjoying it. I'm gonna read up on it again, but I know that he was a fervent admirer of Che and Che's efforts in Africa. But he met that end. I know when they got into his flat, finally, after he was assassinated, you know, they didn't find any opulence, just his bike that he used to tote up a couple of flights of stairs and a whole bunch of books. So they went mm-hmm. and they're looking for red pajamas and that whole, you know, that whole thing with Allende, and they just found his bike and a whole bunch of books on, you know, philosophy and whatever. So very important to remember him, and thank you very much. I'll let the show go on. Thank
well,
you.
Thank you for your call. If anybody else has a call, a question, or a comment, our number is 503-231-8187. This is KBOO. It's your radio station, your voice on the radio dial. So give us a call. And so, I think that I'm very glad that that Thomas Sankara is still is remembered, that he's not been forgotten, because he was one of Africa's greatest leaders until his life was cut short. I believe he was only 37 when he was killed, and the person who sort of masterminded or was complicit in the murder went on to rule the country for about 20 some years. And so like I said, it's justice delayed. It's still it is never too late to dig out the truth. History is, I think history is a very important thing. It's very important to dig out these facts. They tend to get forgotten. The news channels sort of focus on the most recent events, and people kind of are never really aware of how some of these things began. And the war in Ukraine is a good example. You know, we get all the latest military moves, but we don't realize that at one time Ukraine had an elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, who he had good relations with Russia. He saw no reason to fight Russia, and so if that was probably the reason he was overthrown. We did get a lot of the Maidan street protests are very much in the news, although even there the news is not quite complete. Among the rioters or protesters, call them what you will, were neo-Nazis from this Azov battalion, and they were there. They were a presence in Kiev. How many there were is open to dispute, but they were sort of part of the action. And so the real crux of the whole thing is that elected president was overthrown by street mobs, which did include some neo-Nazis, And that has been sort of overlooked in all the, you know, in all the news coming out of Ukraine these days.
Marcos is on the line.
We have somebody on the line. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Per.
Yes.
I just wanted to speak to the general press climate that we're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been more repressive than anything that I can think of in my lifetime. One of the main ways that people communicate with each other these days, of course, is Twitter and YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Facebook and other, these giant tech companies now have the power to, in effect, censor, or if you want to use the word cancel, people with divergent points of view. I'm going to take, for example, Scott Ritter, former United Nations Chief Weapons Inspector in Iraq, Marine Corps Intelligence Officer, very knowledgeable, very thoughtful about the situation right now in Ukraine. He lost his Twitter account because he challenged the dominant narrative over the massacre at Bucha. This is amazing. I mean, people have been threatened with losing Twitter accounts for violence and you know, things that you'd think of as unacceptable. Now Twitter has given itself the power to silence voices that are simply divergent from the dominant narrative. Well, that's very frightening.
It sounds to me like Twitter is sort of, it's almost like they control the public square.
Well, yes, that is the public square. And not to get off subject, but a long time ago, there was a court decision about whether it's okay to petition in a privately owned shopping mall. And a judge, and I'm going back many years, decided, well, the shopping mall is essentially the public square of the modern day. So if somebody wants to do a petition, they should be granted access to the public square. Well, we now in the electronic world, as you point out, the public square is social media. That is our way of directly communicating with each other without having to use platforms like the CNN or MSNBC or such and such. This is the way that citizens can actually exchange information.
Are there any alternatives?
I mean, you'd have to ask somebody else. But getting back to when you were talking about the presence of extreme right-wing organizations, neo-Nazis in Ukraine, it's often diminished as Russian propaganda, as making a big deal, the usual pushback, making a big deal out of nothing, that there's Nazis everywhere. People have been accused of being neo-Nazis in the United States and even in Russia. It's an international problem. The situation in Ukraine is that the Nazi elements are the most powerful. They're the most dynamic. They're the most violent.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require a majority of these people to make them effectively in charge. And the late Richard Cohen, Professor Cohen, who was probably one of the most knowledgeable Americans about situations in Ukraine, he was saying that Zelensky is essentially boxed in by the extreme right, that they have threatened him with death if he was ever to make any kind of peace overtures to Russia. That would be seen as traitorous, and he's been directly threatened with death. Richard Cohen was saying at that moment,
Richard,
we're talking...
Oh, is that Stephen? You're talking about Stephen Cohen?
I'm sorry. I got it wrong. Stephen Cohen, you're right. You know who we're talking about.
Yeah.
The point being that he was saying that if the United States had, in support of the Minsk agreements, which Ukraine was not upholding, one of the conditions of the Minsk agreement, that was the peace agreement that was supposed to be negotiated by the Ukrainian government and Russia. I'm sorry, I might have that wrong about Russia, but the Minsk agreement was the peace agreement, and it was never upheld because the Ukrainians were constantly attacking the Donbass. They were constantly attacking the Russian-speaking Ukrainians over the last almost 8 years, over the last 7 years, 14,000 people killed. Stephen Cullen was saying if the United States had actually had Zelensky's back and saying, we support you in enacting the Minsk agreement, that might have diminished the power of the Nazis to threaten Zelensky. Well, the United States is actually supporting this, so the Nazis would have to step back. The United States never did. So the Nazis essentially have prevailed.
Well, I hear my music.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your call, raising those points. I think it's very good to dig into history and bring out these forgotten facts. So I want to thank you for that call. This has been Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fogering, and stay tuned. It is 9:29, and stay tuned to KBOO. It's your radio station.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.